The Secretary of the Interior urges Montanans to keep fighting for protection of the North Fork of the Flathead and Glacier Park. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We'll also tell you why the Missoula Rural Fire District wants voters to approve a mill levy increase. And in our feature interview, Capitol reporter Dan Boyce talks with Senator John Walsh about Obamacare, military spending, and the upcoming campaign. The way national parks, economics, water quality, mining, train travel, and Native American cultural history can interconnect was highlighted during a recent visit of Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell made to Glacier Park. Katrin Fry reports Senators John Tester and John Walsh hosted Jewell on a tour of Montana, stopping at Glacier to talk about protection of the transboundary North Fork Flathead River.
Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell spoke to a standing-room-only crowd in the Hungry Horse Ranger Station over the weekend. The former head of the outdoor recreation company REI of Seattle says she feels quite at home in Montana.
I have hiked in these hills. I've seen the bears in the hillsides. Seen the piles of bear poop with the bells that smelled like pepper, you know. But you have a pretty extraordinary part of the United States of America, and it is worth taking care of and protecting.
Jewell says grassroots efforts hold a lot of sway with policymakers as chances for them to hear people's voices on issues they find important. She says securing protection of the North Fork on the Flathead River is a great example of people from all over the spectrum coming together to form a common goal.
It's not just because you care about the critters and the landscapes, it's also because it really defines this part of the country. And it's the reason why so many people want to come and vacation in Montana. And it's a reason why we have wonderful places to stay and to eat and to take us into the backcountry and the outdoors, because it drives a lot of the local economy here.
The headwaters to the North Fork of the Flathead River are up in Canada and had been slated for mountaintop removal mining in the 1970s. Protecting the transboundary drainage became a key policy goal of former Senator Max Baucus. In 2010, the British Columbia provincial government entered into a memorandum of understanding with Montana, where British Columbia retired mining leases in the area. The North Fork Protection Act in the Senate, sponsored by Baucus and now by Senators Tester and Walsh, and a recently passed House bill sponsored by Representative Steve Daines, represent the American part of the deal. The issue is currently stalled in the Senate. Tester says it's being held up by Senators Ted Cruz of Texas, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, and Tom Coburn of Oklahoma. Those gathered to meet with Secretary Jewell took the opportunity to applaud the conservation efforts, but also to highlight other issues of concern. Vice Chair of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes, Carol Lankford, says this protection of the Flathead is important. The Flathead Reservation is directly downstream and along the Flathead River as it exits Flathead Lake. Lankford urges people not to lose sight of the Elk River drainage parallel to the North Fork, which has several active and expanding mines operating in Canada. She says her main concern is the selenium going into the Elk River and the Kootenai downstream.
I mean, we'll never get rid of it is what I understand. And that's huge for me. As Indian people, we've always tried to take care of the land and take care of our world around us, and just to have something that, you know, will never, ever be able to take care of it and get rid of it. So that's a huge concern.
Others brought up concerns about oil tanker traffic on the railroad, which runs along the edge of Glacier Park and the Middle Fork of the Flathead River. Jewell says regulating the train traffic does not fall under her jurisdiction. However, she can get information to her colleague, Secretary of Transportation Anthony Fox.
What I can do after this trip is to make sure that he's aware of the sensitive ecosystems that these trains are running through. I'm not familiar with what we do on a federal level versus a state level in terms of interstate transport or within-state transport of substances. That's not part of the Department of the Interior. But because it is so important to the landscapes and the watersheds that we are responsible for, I'll make sure that he and his team are aware of it.
Jewell noted the Park Service has been working with a stagnant budget for the past several years, and the idea of doing more with less is undoable. She says parks have been doing less with less.
We know that starving the budget of the Park Service and other federal land management agencies has undermined the kind of visitor experience that people expect. It's undermined our ability to provide good campground experiences or fight back invasive species. public lands are important to people. They're very, very popular.
Jewell says the 2015 presidential budget shows strong support for the Park Service leading up to its centennial celebration in 2016.
And it's an opportunity to make sure that all Americans know that these are their public lands, and whether it is national parks or city parks or other public lands, we want to make sure that people are welcomed into to the outdoors and to open spaces.
Jewell says a recent economic impact report released by the Park Service helps her make the case for funding, as it shows for every dollar invested in the national parks, $10 goes back into the economy. To close out the meeting, she urged those assembled to keep organizing on the community level, getting differing opinions to the table to work on solutions, and writing letters, in their own words, to elected officials saying, quote, "Your voice matters." Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
And in other news from around the state, Montana Avalanche Centers have completed investigations into the recent deaths of two men in snow slides. The West Central Montana Avalanche Center says 27-year-old Peter Maxwell of Missoula was digging snow pits to determine the stability of the snow northeast of Phillipsburg before a planned backcountry ski trip on March 10th when he triggered the avalanche that killed him. The next day, the manager of a hotel in Cook City told a group of Minnesota snowmobilers that the avalanche danger was high and he recommended that they not go out. The group decided they'd be safe if they avoided avalanche terrain, but they took more risks in the afternoon. The Gallatin National Forest Avalanche Center says 18-year-old Zach Junkermeyer rode about a third of the way up Crown Butte when two fellow riders rode uphill past him on either side, triggering the fatal slide.
A Montana State University student who was on an academic spring break trip to London has died in a fall. MSU spokesman Tracy Ellig says 24-year-old Aaron Plowman apparently climbed onto the roof of an abandoned building early Friday and died in a fall after the roof collapsed. Plowman was a senior English major from Soulsbyville, California. London Metropolitan Police responded and told MSU officials that Plowman's death was accidental. Plowman was one of 14 students on the 10-day Shakespeare's England trip led by Gretchen Minton, an associate professor of English. Ellig says the other students on the trip have returned to Bozeman. Last May, associate professor Betsy Palmer died of injuries suffered in a landslide during an MSU study abroad trip to Nepal.
Officials in Ravalli County have released the name of a Missoula man who was shot to death after apparently breaking into a home in the Victor area. Sheriff Chris Hoffman says 39-year-old Tobias Ian Bishop was shot at about 4 a.m. yesterday after the homeowner said the man broke a window, entered his house, and ignored orders not to move. An investigation found Bishop parked a borrowed van between two houses and had spent at least an hour moving items from both houses to the van before trying to enter the second home where he was shot. Hoffman says Bishop has previous convictions for burglary, assault, and drug-related arrests in Arizona, Idaho, and Montana. He was wanted on arrest warrants in Arizona and Flathead County for theft and forgery.
The chairman of the Montana Reserve Water Rights Commission says discussions have been held on reopening negotiations for a water rights compact with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes to include protections for irrigators living on or near the Flathead Reservation. Chris Tweeton said today the dissolution of the Flathead Joint Board of Control created uncertainty around a proposed agreement on how to allocate water used in the Flathead Indian Irrigation Project. The water use agreement was an appendix to the larger Flathead Water Rights Compact, and Tweeton says negotiations would be to incorporate it into the body of the compact. But it is unclear whether the dispute over the rights and allocation of water can be resolved out of court. Four lawsuits have been filed since the legislature rejected the agreement last year.
The Missoula Rural Fire District will ask voters to approve a mill levy increase on the May 6th ballot. District Fire Chief Bill Caldwell says the money will allow the district to keep six firefighters it hired 2 years ago under a federal grant that expires in September.
Part of the reason that we accepted the grant was to try and work a different staffing model to provide service to the customers. Missoula Rural Fire District is a combination fire department. We rely on career staff and volunteers in our community and volunteers in our college resident program to provide our service. Those volunteers are more available from 7 in the evening till 7 in the morning, so we have a strong staffing need to staff our five stations from 7 in the morning till 7 in the evening.
The mill levy increase would cost the owner of a $200,000 home just over $26 a year. Caldwell says that's less than homeowners would save from the better insurance rating the district has because of the additional firefighters.
We've had correspondence with folks in the Lolo community whose insurance premiums on their homes have gone down $130 a year.
Caldwell says if the mill levy increase is voted down, it's likely the six firefighters will have to be let go. If it passes, it would be the district's first voter-approved mill levy increase since 1992.
State officials say they will rework plans to ease restrictions on Yellowstone National Park bison that enter Montana after the Board of Livestock declined to act on a proposal giving the animals more room to roam. State veterinarian Marty Zalewski said today that board members wanted more information on the potential costs of a proposal allowing bison onto more than 400,000 acres outside the park. That includes the Hebgen Basin, the Taylor Fork of the Gallatin River, and other areas where bison were long prohibited because of disease concerns. Thousands of bisons were killed over the past two decades as they attempted to re-enter parts of Montana. The proposal would let bison remain outside Yellowstone year-round only if the park's population reduced sharply from the 4,600 animals tallied last year.
University of Montana student Tristan Persico was one of 14 people from across the country honored today at the White House with what's called a Champions of Change Award. Persico is studying parks, tourism, and recreation management at the University of Montana, where he leads the Veterans Outreach Program. It's sponsored by the Montana Wilderness Association and helps combat veterans readjust to civilian life through outdoor experiences. Persico knows just how complicated that readjustment phase can be. He served in Afghanistan as an explosive ordnance disposal technician for the U.S. Air Force from 2009 to 2011. In short, he defused improvised explosive devices in a war zone. He says MWA's Veterans Outreach Program has a healing effect on its participants.
First and foremost, veterans get to connect with each other, and that's something that's dearly missed once you leave the military community. And, that's just so important, I think, especially in a wilderness setting where you have the naturally therapeutic values of wilderness. And then on the other hand, it helps wilderness, too, because veterans are a very, well-respected group, and they have overwhelming support from the public. So the more appreciation veterans gather, the more outspoken they'll be on wilderness issues.
We'll have more with Tristan Persico on tomorrow's Montana Evening Edition.
State employees are taking an opportunity to sport some casual wear to work in exchange for donations to the American Cancer Society. It's part of what the society calls the Suits and Sneakers Challenge. From now until the end of the NCAA Finals basketball tournament, state workers will be able to wear sneakers with their business suits or collegiate apparel on Thursdays and Fridays in exchange for a $5 donation. Governor Steve Bullock himself donned some silver and black sneakers to announce his cabinet will compete with other state agencies in funding efforts for the challenge. Bullock says nearly every Montanan has been impacted by cancer at some point.
It's estimated that 5,500 Montanans are diagnosed with cancer each year. One in two men and one in three women will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. It's because of these statistics that we commit ourselves to continuing our fight against cancer long after March Madness is over and our brackets have been busted and we might have sworn off college basketball.
Staff with the American Cancer Society says this is the first time such a challenge has been attempted by government workers statewide. The organization hopes to raise at least $5,000 with the effort. Governor Bullock also released his bracket for the March Madness tournament. He has Louisville coming out on top, beating Michigan State.
Montana's newest United States Senator, John Walsh, is starting his second month in office. The former lieutenant governor and head of the Montana National Guard was appointed by Governor Bullock to fill the seat vacated by longtime Senator Max Baucus. Baucus is now the U.S. ambassador to China. Walsh was already running for the Senate seat when appointed. Bullock's move to appoint him has been seen as an attempt to give Walsh a political edge in this November's election against likely Republican challenger Congressman Steve Daines. Senator Walsh is currently on a tour of several Montana cities and took the time to stop by our studios in Missoula. In this evening's feature interview, Walsh speaks with Capitol reporter Dan Boyce about his more than 30-year career in the Montana National Guard, his priorities in his new office, and the perception his appointment was crafted by Washington, D.C. insiders.
You were born and raised in Butte. You stress bringing Montana values to Washington. Your campaign website, your slogan says Montana Courage. What does that mean to you? What Montana values did you learn growing up in Butte that you think need to be brought to Washington?
My dad worked for the Anaconda Company. I remember, my dad was a hard worker. He'd go to work early in the morning, come home late afternoon, and I remember times that, a pipe would break or something over on the hill, and he'd go out for overtime, come home 11, 12 o'clock, and then get up and do it, hit that morning again at 7 o'clock. So, I was raised with what I believe a very strong work ethic, not afraid to work hard and get dirty. I still remember days when the Anaconda Company would go on strike and my dad would have to leave town, come over here to Missoula or Bozeman to work because, still had to put food on the table. But my parents weren't able to put a lot of money aside for me to go to school, and I wanted to continue my education. So I joined the National Guard. And so the National Guard was really something that did change my life. I knew I wanted to go to school, but really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. Initially thought about going to law school. So I took political science and history classes at Carroll. But then once I joined the Guard, I really, I enjoyed the people, I enjoyed the mission. And then an opportunity came out in 1984 to go work full-time for the National Guard. Ended up loving everything about the Montana National Guard and made a career of it. So, the values that I learned in the military about honor, integrity, loyalty, selfless service, those are, the military values that I started to learn, early in my career and the leadership opportunities. And so when I talk about Montana values and Montana courage, I talk about the courage to do what's right, no matter what the consequences.
Sir, you are the first Iraq War veteran to serve in the United States Senate. You led more than 700 Montana National Guard soldiers into that war in 2004 and 2005. You certainly would bring unique insight, yet you were not placed on the Veterans Affairs or Armed Services committees. Did you ask to be appointed to those committees?
I talked to Leader Reed when he was making the appointment for committees, and I told him, what some of my interests were, from being from Montana, that agriculture is very important to me. Montana is a big player in, commerce, so commerce is important to the state of Montana. And then with my background, military affairs, and I talked to him about being placed on the Senate Armed Services Committee. And so he, but I told him I will serve wherever you think I would serve the best in the Senate and represent the citizens of Montana. So at this time, the Senate Armed Services Committee didn't have a position on it. Those are two committees that are very sought after. And, being the 100th ranking senator in the United States Senate, there's a lot of people ahead of me that with seniority that wanted to be placed on those committees. And so there were only, I think, one or two when the shuffle took place, one or two positions on each of those committees. But I am really happy with the committees that I have been placed on, because I think that agriculture is our number one industry here in Montana, and commerce will also have a very big impact on Montana's businesses around the state.
When you first started your campaign last summer, you were running as a political outsider. Now you do work in Washington. You have a voting record now. Much of your staff comes from Senator Baucus's office. How did you decide those very different campaign strategies when you accepted the governor's appointment to the United States Senate?
From the day that I started thinking about running for the position, I felt that Washington is broken. Washington's not able to get anything done. We shut our government down, cost Montanans and our nation millions of dollars by irresponsible actions by people in Washington, D.C. And then when I, had the opportunity when Senator Baucus was appointed by the president to become the ambassador to China, and then, I talked with my family about that and then told Governor Bullock that I was interested in the position. Well, this will give me the opportunity to go back and serve and to be able to show Montanans what kind of a United States senator I'm going to be.
Attack ads and your opponents are now painting you as a Washington insider, though. The circumstances surrounding Senator Baucus's exit and Governor Bullock's choice of you as the placeholder until this November's election, without taking input from the public or conducting any interviews, that's unsettling to a lot of Montanans. How do you overcome the widespread public perception that your appointment was orchestrated by the highest levels of the Democratic establishment, that it was a backroom deal?
Well, you know, first of all, I would say that that character, those characteristics are really outrageous. I don't believe that it was any type of backroom deal at all. You know, this was a decision that Governor Bullock made. Montana's constitution is pretty clear. Governor Bullock made the decision. I'm honored to be the individual that he selected, and I'm going to continue to keep that in mind every day as I'm serving the citizens of Montana.
In the list of priorities on your campaign website, the first on that list says the courage to reduce our nation's debt and balance the budget. And you say that needs to happen without cutting Social Security and Medicare benefits. Those are the two largest areas of the federal budget if you combine Medicare with Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program. The third biggest part of the budget, at about 20%, is defense. You have come out in support of cutting waste in the military. What is it that you think needs to be cut there?
Well, first of all, I think that government across the board, we need to take a look and cut, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse, government-wide. You know, rather than cut programs that are going to impact Montana's most vulnerable citizens, people that are have earned and worked hard for Social Security benefits and Medicare benefits, you know, rather than tear those programs down and tear them apart, we need to be strengthening those programs. You know, and I think there may be some waste, fraud, and abuse within those two programs specifically that we could attack, identify, and fix. But then when getting to defense, you know, like I said, I've served 33 years in the National Guard. I've seen where there's a lot of waste and spending that could be cut. And a perfect example, the United States Army, they've told Congress pretty specifically, we do not need any more M1 tanks. But the Congress wants to continue to build M1 tanks. You know, that's millions of dollars each year that we're going to continue to build on tanks. So, you know, in this case, why aren't we going to listen to the leaders of our military who know, you know, what equipment and capabilities they need, and you know, take that money and put it back into the Treasury? Also, in Montana, we have, and every state, for example, some of our contracts that we have around the country, and the contracts in military spending, I believe should be looked at, and we could cut a lot of contracts and save a lot of money there. So I know that there's a lot of money that could be saved in the defense industry and still not have a negative impact on our national security posture.
So is there wasteful military spending in the state of Montana that should be cut?
Well, I wouldn't say specifically wasteful spending in Montana, but the way that the military spends money, for example, should be looked at.
The Affordable Care Act will certainly be a very hot-button issue as we move into this election cycle. Your likely opponent, Steve Daines, has been strongly against Obamacare since he's taken office. It is an unpopular law in Montana. You continue to support it. Why?
Well, I don't know that you have ever heard me come out and say that I support the Affordable Care Act, because I'm really disappointed in the way that the rollout came about. You know, I think it was disastrous. And if I was the President of the United States and a program like that came out, I would be very disappointed. You know, when this program was, or the Affordable Care Act was passed into law, I was preparing soldiers and airmen to deploy to Iraq and Afghanistan. So I didn't vote on the Affordable Care Act, and there's been a lot of problems with the Affordable Care Act. So I am disappointed. Although I do believe that, you know, when you look at the numbers, we do need health care reform in this country. And so I'm all for reforming health care and doing it in a way that can bring down costs on Montanans and provide health care, quality, affordable health care coverage to all of our citizens. So that's really where I want to focus. And I'm open to ideas from both sides of the aisle on how to get that done.
That is also how many Republicans would characterize what they want to do, reform health care and to bring down costs and to bring more people into the system. They say they would like to do it through repealing the Affordable Care Act and starting over. Is that what you advocate?
Well, I'm not necessarily going to say start over at this point, because when you look at the money that has been spent on the Affordable Care Act up to this point, that, you know, to me, that would be very wasteful. You know, there are a couple of programs within a couple of reforms that have taken place that I think are very, very beneficial. For example, my wife is a diabetic. She's been a diabetic for over 43 years. And we were always concerned, you know, about If I were to lose or, you know, lost my ability to serve in the military, because I was a federal employee, and if I would have lost my job, I would have lost my health care coverage, and in turn, my wife would not have been able to be, because of her pre-existing condition, would not have been able to get health care coverage. So, you know, I don't think that any citizen should be, you know, one hospital visit away from going into bankruptcy. The hundreds of thousands of other Montanans who have pre-existing conditions should not have to not be worried about being able to obtain health care coverage because of that. So that's one thing that I think is positive. And then I have a son who is 24 years old, and him being allowed to stay on my health care coverage until he's 26. You know, so those are a couple of things that I think that the reforms that are positive. We just need to continue to find other positive reforms and move forward.
This will undoubtedly be a very intense election, especially with the continuing influence of outside political spending in elections. Yet your likely opponent, Steve Daines, and you, in some senses, at this point, you're working together. You're both part of the Montana delegation. You see each other each Wednesday at the Coffee with Constituents meeting, which the entire Montana delegation has in Washington, D.C., to casually meet with Montanans who are visiting the nation's capital. You do have a relationship with Steve Daines. Now, describe how that relationship is at this point. Is it cordial? Is it businesslike?
You know, I think it is, very cordial and businesslike. You know, we have a job to do back in Washington, D.C., and that's to serve the citizens of Montana. So I think we're both focused on making sure that that happens. Montanans will have the opportunity to see, you know, the differences between, based on our votes, you know, how Congressman Daines is going to vote and how I'm going to vote. You know, I would never, for example, vote to shut down the government. You know, I think that's an irresponsible decision. You know, it costs Montanans millions of dollars. It costs our country millions of dollars. You know, so that's just one example of where Congressman Steve Daines and I differ.
Important to note, Congressman Daines did switch his vote on shutting down the government. He did vote to reopen the government, going against the majority of Republicans in the House.
Yes, he did. And I think that was, you know, after the fact, after he saw the negative impact that it was having on Montanans, and after he heard from Montanans that was not the right thing to do, you know, raising the debt limit. You know, that Congressman Daines, I don't think, supports raising the debt limit. I voted to support to raise the debt limit. And the reason I did that is because, you know, I'm all for reducing our debt and reducing our spending, but we should never, you know, put the full faith of the United States government in question and not pay the bills that we've already incurred. What would happen if America's households decided not to pay their power bills or their credit bills? You know, that's just unacceptable.
Montana's newest United States Senator, John Walsh. Sir, thank you so much for your time today.
You bet, Dan. Thank you, and have a great day.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide, tonight should be mostly cloudy with lows 15 to 22 degrees. Tomorrow, expect mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and snow and highs in the 40s. For central Montana, tonight should have increasing clouds with isolated rain and snow in the evening and lows 20 to 25 degrees. Tomorrow, expect mostly cloudy skies and highs in the 40s. For southwest Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies and lows in the teens. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with highs 35 to 45 degrees.
Currently, it's a rather gray day in our listening area. Helena is 40 degrees with partly cloudy conditions, and Kalispell it's cloudy and 43 degrees. Butte has 35 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. Great Falls is mostly cloudy as well with 40 degrees. Here in Missoula, the temperature under cloudy skies is 39. It's also 39 and mostly cloudy in Dillon. It's also a little bit windy. In Hamilton, it's cloudy and 38 degrees. Libby has 42 with cloudy conditions, and in Polson, skies are cloudy and it's 41 degrees.
If you have a comment about tonight's newscast, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.